Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer today is Adam Staniszewski. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Viking River Cruises, exploring the world in comfort, offering European cruises on Viking longships. More at vrc.com/radio. From Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. And from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, developing solutions to support strong families and communities for America's children. At AECF.org. This is NPR.
Most of the fish we eat in the U.S. is imported, yet much of the fish we catch here is exported. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Paul Greenberg about this seafood deficit and its implications for our health and the health of our economy and the oceans. Greenberg is the author of American Catch, The Fight for Our Local Seafood. Join us.
Programming support comes from the Gold Belt Mount Roberts Tram, welcoming Master Carver Doug Chilton, carving a new 10-foot totem atop the mountain Sunday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 4. The Gold Belt Mount Roberts Tram, proud to support public radio in Juneau.
As June 30th approaches and the close of our fiscal year, we want to remind you that we'll be drawing for an iPad Air on Tuesday morning. You have until the end of the day on Monday to get your name in the hat. If you're a sustaining member or made a gift this June, you're automatically entered. To be eligible without making a gift, just come by the station Monday by 4 p.m. and we'll get you taken care of. All of us at KTOO, KRNN, and KXLL want to thank you for your generosity this year. You make public media in Juneau possible.
Hello and welcome to the June 30th edition of Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News. Today we have a very good show. We'll hear about this magic show at the high school tonight, the downtown high school. It's a benefit for firefighters. Then we'll chat with Chris Taylor of the Canvas, and then we're going to learn about the new business in town, new owners of the postal contract station downtown, and then we'll learn about the planetarium film Apollo 18 and chat with Ben Court of NCADD. All that and more. Stay tuned. National Native News is up next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Each summer, many Alaska Native families catch dry and smoke fish to sustain them through the winter. The most coveted is king salmon, but fishing restrictions have hit many families hard this year. KYUK's Daisha Eaton reports.
Just outside Nabuskiak at a simple camp with alder drying racks, Elder Sophie Jenkins says restrictions are traumatizing.
I looked at genocide and it says like this. People make policies, and where people have no say with the law, with the policies and rules and regulations. I'm very familiar with oppression and, you know, trauma. And that's how I feel right now.
After 2013 showed the weakest king salmon run on record, managers of the Kuskokwim River fishery are not allowing directed king salmon fishing. That means the 8-inch mesh nets that were introduced by the commercial fishery in the 50s and 60s and have become commonplace in YK Delta households have been banned completely. Instead, fishers have been limited to short, 4-inch mesh set nets. They're much less productive, and many fishermen don't own them. Some say purchasing the net is too expensive. Now it's late in the fishing season, and managers have been allowing short openings with 6-inch gear for chum and sockeye salmon. Jenkins ordered the 6-inch net, but she says she couldn't find one in Alaska. They were sold out, so she ordered one from a company in Tennessee.
And I'm still waiting. It's been a week. And I know there was fishing yesterday, and I was so depressed. I don't have anything hanging.
Residents along the Kuskokwim say the restrictions have created haves and have-nots. At the time this story was filed, Elder Sophie Jenkins was still waiting for her net to arrive. If it comes in time, she says she hopes to get some fish on her rack. She says getting chum and reds is good, but they miss their kings. In Bethel, I'm Deja Eaton.
The Office of Natural Resources Revenue is reforming its system for determining the value of oil from reservations. As Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports, the agency sought input from tribes and the energy industry.
The agency has struggled in the past to meet its legal obligation to negotiate fair prices for tribal resources. Claire Ware is the director of the Shoshone Arapaho Tribe's Minerals Compliance Program and sat on the committee. She says the old rules put tribes at a disadvantage.
They do not know where their oil's going. They do not know whether they're getting the right price or if it's fair. For the royalty owner, I think they would feel that, hey, this is the proposed rule. We're going to get paid for a major portion price, which is based on index for this area.
Ware says companies were allowed to set the price of oil, often at lower than market value. The new rule will instead base the price of oil on the highest producing fields. Western Energy Alliance spokesman Kathleen Scama also worked on the committee. She says nobody got 100% of what they wanted.
We struck a balance in the committee so that we defined areas pretty fairly so that the tribes get that major portion price, but producers aren't penalized for those transportation costs.
She says that because tribes and industry were able to reach an agreement, she expects more producers to operate on tribal lands in the future. The rules will go into effect in August. I'm Melody Edwards.
In June 2013, the Obama administration announced the establishment of the White House Council on Native American Affairs to ensure the federal government engages in government-to-government relationships with federally recognized tribes. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Not voting is not rebelling, it's surrendering. Your voice counts when you vote. First, you have to register to find out more at www.nativevote.org. Brought to you by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American radio service.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:05 p.m. on June 30th. Just want to let you know, Capital Transit route change goes into effect today. There is no longer midday service to or from North Douglas. Okay, other things that are on the docket is the Juno Douglas High School, class of 1984. They're having their 30-year reunion this year starting July 2nd through July 6th. If you're interested to go, if you're part of that alumni, you need to register. You can check it out at Facebook. Just go to JDHS 1984 and you will find it. That sounds almost, I don't know, cryptic in a way. Okay, so we have a great show today. As I said, I'm Joan Pardis. I'm your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. We're sitting in the studios here in downtown Juneau, and the weather is looking at numerous showers today and tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, lows around 50, light winds. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, isolated showers in the morning, and then highs around 68. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, and Wednesday, mostly cloudy. Okay, so our first guest, we've got a taped interview with Farrell Dillon. He's doing a magic show tonight at the Juneau Douglas High School Auditorium at 5 p.m. It's a fundraiser for firefighters here in Juneau, and Jeff Brown chatted with him earlier, and here we go. We're going to listen to that interview.
I'm in the studio with Farrell Dillon. He's a magician. He's performing tonight at 5 o'clock at the Juneau Douglas High School Auditorium. Farrell, thanks for coming down to Juneau today.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, where are you from?
I live in Boise, Idaho now, but I grew up in California, and I lived in Hollywood for the last 11 years. I just literally moved to Boise because I'm getting married.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What got you interested in magic?
I've been doing magic for a really long time, but my mom got me a little Garfield magic deck of cards when I was a little kid, and at first I thought it was really stupid, and I got bored one day, and I opened it up, and I just got fascinated with magic and magic tricks, and it never stopped, and so ever since I was 12, I've been doing the same thing and obsessing over magic tricks.
There's different kinds of magic. There's close-up, there's stage magic, and there's illusions and family magic and adult magic. And what kind of magic do you do?
What I do is a family show, so it's perfect for all ages. So if people want to come out and they want to bring their kids, it's a perfect show for kids. But it's a stand-up comedy magic show. So what they will see is not big illusions, but it's stage magic done with my sense of humor and filled with comedy and laughs. And it's a great show for all ages.
A place like the High School Auditorium, sometimes the magicians can do a whole auditorium with just a deck of cards.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's amazing what you can do. As long as you can present the magic in a big way, you can do an entire auditorium with just a deck of cards. Fortunately, though, I don't do just a deck of cards. In fact, there's only one card trick in my entire show, and it's a really, really good card trick, but I don't want to give anything away yet.
I understand you were nominated for Stage Magician of the Year at the Magic Castle in Hollywood.
Yeah, I was nominated for Stage Magician of the Year at the Magic Castle in Hollywood, which was a huge honor. It was great to be recognized among my peers in the magic community. And if people don't know what the Magic Castle is, it's sort of like the Academy for the Oscars. So only members can vote on who they think were the best magicians for the year. And I was lucky to be nominated among four other people for that prestigious honor.
What's magic supposed to do? What's its job?
Well, I think magic's job over the centuries has changed. Originally, I think magic was used to convince people of like religious sort of things. It was used in that way to convince people of healing powers and things like that. But I think now we're all a lot smarter than that, and we realize that magic now is for entertainment. I think that people are fascinated by it, and they want to believe in something, that something's out there, that magic is real. And I think that that gives them a chance to not only be entertained by it, but to be fascinated by it. And even in the world of all this technology, I think that seeing magic live and in person is really important. And I think that it is still to this day, instill that sense of wonder into people. And I think that that's an important thing to never let go of.
There's a magician by the name of Paul Harris who talked about the moment of astonishment. You want to talk about that for him?
Oh, yeah. Well, Paul Harris, if people don't know, is a very famous magician. And he has a book called The Art of Astonishment. And what astonishment is that moment where you realize what you're seeing can't be possible. And it's almost like a breathtaking experience. You know, it's the moment of the magic trick. And I think that even though it lasts only a few seconds, it's what people remember for years and years.
Have there been any magic tricks that the magician passed away and nobody knows how he did the trick?
You know what? There are a lot of those. And in fact, Houdini is one of the big proponents of that. I mean, there are a lot of things that people had theories on, which he you know, neither confirmed nor denied. So nobody knows nobody has the real evidence of how some of these things were accomplished, but they can surmise possibilities. But there are plenty of magicians out there who never gave away their real secrets.
Do you have any favorite magicians that people might be aware of their names in the audience?
You know, obviously there's the David Copperfields, the Doug Hennings, the Siegfried and Roys, but my favorite magicians, I have a few. One is Mark Kalin and Ginger. They're an illusion team out of Reno. They're fantastic magicians. Rick Thomas is one of my favorite magicians. He had a show in Vegas for a long time. As far as comedy magicians go, which is the type of magic that I love to perform, Levent, L-E-V-E-N-T, if you want to look him up on the internet. He works on a lot of cruise ships, so he's in and out of this area a lot. And he is one of the best comedy magicians out there. Obviously, there's another magician who has a show in Las Vegas. His name is Matt King. He works at Harrah's. He has the best job in the world. He works at a casino, does shows at 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock p.m. He's home by 5. He has a family. He's the nicest guy in the world. And he has the best comedy magic show there is, period.
Do you start doing magic shows for birthday parties and kids? And if so, how has your magic show changed over the years?
Well, you know, I started doing magic shows for birthday parties and kids, and obviously my show has evolved from that. And now I'm the comedy magician who tours with the Masters of Illusion Live. It's a magic show that tours in performing arts centers all across the United States. We've been to 6 different countries, and I've been doing that for 3 years now. And so what that's allowed me to do is have my show grow into a show that can be performed in giant theaters. And even though it's a comedy magic show and it's not an illusion show, you get the feeling like a lot of stuff happened and the show was actually pretty big. You know, changing from doing kids' birthday parties and stuff, which, by the way, is the hardest type of magic to do, because you're going into venues where you don't know, like, people don't have a sound system, they don't have anything. You're just going in their backyard and doing a magic show for them. And a lot of people don't realize, like, how important setting up the magic show is. And at a birthday party, obviously, that's one of the hardest places to perform. And children are extremely difficult to entertain.
I know how I did it. I hear that a lot from kids.
You hear that a lot from kids. And, you know, sometimes they're right. And sometimes they make up stuff in their head that isn't the way it works, but it's very fascinating to hear what they think might be the way that it works. Because a lot of kids are very, very creative, and they have no filter.
We talked earlier about the moment of astonishment. Being a magician, you probably know how most tricks are done, but do you ever get that moment yourself?
You know what? I do from time to time. And sometimes it's not because I don't know how the trick works, but it's because how beautifully the trick is done.
What can people expect tonight at 5 o'clock at the high school auditorium?
They can expect a lot of laughs, a whole lot of fun, and there will be music, there will be magic, and I think that they will be astonished in multiple parts of the show. I'm looking forward to it, so hopefully, you know, people come out and they have a good time.
I'm talking with Farrell Dillon. He's performing at 5 o'clock tonight at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium.
This is a benefit for the firefighters, by the way.
Yeah, thanks for doing that.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to KTOO News Juno, the Juno Afternoon Show. It's June 30th. It's 3:14 p.m. I'm in the studio with Jeff Brown, the producer and engineer of the show, and a magician himself. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host, and I'm chatting with Kelly Manning of The Canvas. She's our next guest. How are you, Kelly?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. So let's start with the wacky first Thursday. Since Friday is July 4th, we're having a first Thursday. So what's happening at the Canvas?
Yeah. So, you know, everybody's all worn out by the end of the day on the 4th. So everybody's going to be downtown for the 3rd anyway. We're going to open our show. We have Jacinda Ryan. She's a reach artist, and she's opening No Bones About It. This is a series of work that she's been working on for a year and a half, and it's ink drawings, paintings, and screen prints. And she's been working with mixed media, so really exploring how she can sort of cross media and use them in interesting effect. And they're really beautiful pieces that she's been working on that capture sort of her whimsical sense of of the world, but they're skeletal drawings. So she's got like frog skulls and horse skulls, but then they kind of have a whimsical element to them as well.
Hmm.
As well as a couple of portraits that she did of dogs that are paintings that are in there. So it's a really great mix of images. I think it'll be a really fun show for people to come and check out. A little different.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
It sounds great. So what time is the show on the first Thursday?
So it's a regular opening, just like we normally do, 4:30 to 7 at the Canvas Gallery, right on Seward Street, 223 Seward Street.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
So how do you pick? Like, do you pick your artists? Like, do you sit down in January and scope out the whole year? Or how does it work
you
to
know,
pick your first Friday, in this case, first Thursday artists?
Yeah. You know, we're looking at doing like a once-a-year process, but currently, people that want to have a show at the Canvas can apply through our website, and we've got a process, and then we sit down with a panel, and we usually, if we have like a visiting artist or an opportunity like that, then we try to bring in people that maybe are, you know, more objective and sit down and have a panel discussion around artists for the year. And really, they get scheduled out pretty far out. We're scheduled out for most of 2015. One of the things that we've really focused on is trying to make sure that we have reach artist shows, so the individuals that we work with that experience disabilities, that we have opportunities for them to have shows. Our December show is always a group show for our students. But one of the things, and Jacinta's one of our first that we've been looking at, is trying to have more solo show opportunities. It takes a little bit more time. We have to plan those out further in advance, but we have been looking to have more of those. So those we work with the students and identify who's really got a track, who has a vision of what they want to do, and identify those folks and talk with them about whether or not it's something they want to do. Usually takes a lot of working with family and their support system to make sure that everybody's on board, because it's a lot to put together a show, especially a solo show. And
right. Let me ask you a question about that. So a solo show, just typically, you know, an average, how many pieces are in a solo show?
Yeah, so with our space, you know, usually, depending on the size, we're looking at anywhere from like 19 to 25 pieces. We have a relatively large gallery space, a lot of wall space, and so it just depends on the size and scope of someone's work, but somewhere in that range is going to be, you know, for sort of your average size painting, drawing.
That's a lot of output.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, absolutely. But what a wonderful opportunity. So that's this Thursday, but then you were talking about visiting artists, and I think you have some visiting artists coming to town doing some classes this summer. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a couple of workshops we're really excited about. We've got Linda Infante Lyons, and she's going to be doing a landscape workshop July 16th, 17th, and 18th. And it's space limited because we just only have so much room for people to have the space to work, and we want to make sure people have the time really to focus with the artist when they come. Linda is a really talented statewide artist. She's from Alaska. She's a Rasmussen Award winner. She's done 1% for the art projects in the state. So she's pretty well established as a state artist, works through the Anchorage Museum Contemporary Artist Collection, and so she's well known in Anchorage, a little less so down here, but we've identified her through the Rasmussen connection, and so she's coming down for this workshop. It's the 16th, 17th, and 18th in the evenings, and then the 19th and 20th are those weekend days, so it's a five-day workshop that
and
people have an
opportunity. And this is for adults 18 and older? Or?
Yeah, this is for adults. Yeah,
okay.
Usually we try to identify 18 and older. If there was a really motivated high school student, we might talk about
it. Okay. So when you say a landscape workshop, what does that mean? Like, what's the medium?
So it's painting.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's paintings and
maybe
so
that's
she,
obvious, but I just wanted
to. Yeah, so landscape paintings. And and so the focus really is on how to capture landscapes in painting, and that's kind of the focus
and is
attention.
It to all levels, even though she's a very accomplished artist? Is it for all levels?
Absolutely. We always try to make sure that our class sizes are not so big that that if there's somebody that's a beginner, they can get the attention that they need, but somebody that's a little bit more advanced will have the time to ask those more, you know, delving questions. And so we try to really keep that in mind and really look at artists that can meet the needs of both beginner and advanced painters.
That sounds great. So that's a wonderful opportunity. And then you also have an artist coming to do a youth class. Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. We've got Jennifer Wildermuth, and she's coming for Lions, Tigers, and Bears, Oh My. So the project is going to be a week-long workshop for youth ages 9 and up, and they're going to be working on animal drawings and really getting their technique, their observational skill, getting proportion, and then using some skills and techniques that Jen has has experience in getting that real realistic look. That, you know, a lot of cut time kids in particular, they're kind of getting to that, especially around that like 9-10 age, they're starting to really want to think about realistic drawing, and she's going to help them with the skills and techniques that would help them get there.
That sounds great. So how do people find out more?
So anytime that people want to learn about Canvas classes, we welcome them to check out our website, canvasarts.org, and we update our classes regularly, so as we add new opportunities like this, we always update on the website. And then obviously people can give us a call or stop by. Our phone number is 586-1750, and we're right there on Seward Street, 223 Seward Street. People can come on in and ask questions anytime.
And even ask questions this Thursday, for the first Thursday. From 4:30 to 7.
Yeah,
check out
yeah.
the Reach Artist that's
absolutely
doing your show. And what's the name of that show one more time?
It's No Bones About It with Jacinda Ryan. Yeah.
That sounds great. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and we hope to see people on Thursday.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 30th of June, 2014. It was on this day in 1860 at Oxford, a debate took place on the merits of the theory of evolution, meeting of the British Association for the Advancement of Science. Darwin's book on the origin of species had just been published 7 months before, and it was being hotly argued by scientists and theologians. The Bishop of Oxford, Samuel Wilberforce, was arguing one side, and a number of scientists were arguing the other, including Thomas Henry Huxley. The hall was packed. In the debate, the bishop asked Huxley whether he was descended from an ape on his father's side or his mother's, and Huxley said that he was not ashamed to have a monkey as an ancestor, but he would be ashamed to descend from someone who used his great gifts to obscure the truth. It's the birthday of the man who wrote the Beggar's Opera, first performed 1728, the poet John Gay, born in Barnstaple, England, in 1685. It's the birthday of the Polish poet Czesław Miłosz, born in Lithuania, 1911. And it was on this day, 1936, Margaret Mitchell's novel Gone with the Wind was published. She was from a prominent Atlanta family. She'd grown up hearing stories of the Civil War, went off to Smith College. She was a flapper in the 20s, cut her hair short, smoked cigarettes, drank corn liquor, read scandalous books like Lady Chatterley's Lover, shocked her family's social circle. For a while, she was encouraging 5 young men at the same time that she might marry them. Married a bootlegger, marriage that lasted just a few months, got a job as a reporter for the Atlanta Journal, and a few years later, she married John Marsh, who'd been the best man at her first wedding. In 1926, she injured her ankle, had to stay in bed and rest, quit her job at the newspaper, and she started writing fiction, a novel set during the Civil War. She wrote most of it in 3 years, didn't do anything with the manuscript, fussed over it for about 10 more years, writing on a Remington typewriter on her sewing table. In the spring of 1935, an editor from Macmillan, Harold Latham, came through town, scouting for manuscripts. She wasn't going to let him see it, but one of her friends scoffed at the idea of Margaret Mitchell ever writing anything, and so Margaret Mitchell handed over her manuscript. It was a mess. It took her a year to rework the novel. It came out on this day in 1936. It sold 1 million copies in its first 6 months, won the Pulitzer Prize, and was made into a movie in 1939 that became the highest-earning film of all time. Here's a poem for today by Sheila Packer, entitled Rhubarb. Celebrate bitter things after long winter, rhubarb's red-green stalks and partial sun shared with cutworm and fly and ants that come. No house can resist their arrival. Life's too much or not enough. Savor the undernote of butter. Smile in dandelions' faces after the rabbits take other blossoms. Taste from the plate I've heaped tart rhubarb, ripe strawberries, and sugar. Sheila Packer's poem Rhubarb from Night Train Red Dust Poems of the Iron Range, published by Wildwood River Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Jerry Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 3:26 p.m. in Alaska's capital city, the Juneau Airport. The temperature is 61. Downtown Juneau, it's 59. And the Mendenhall Valley is 62. It's nice and balmy here in the studio with Jeff Brown on the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your host. And our next guest is Kristi Nami Erickson. She is a community organizer, a spoken word artist, a recipient of many different awards and grants. And she's also... adding one more to her long list of credentials is business owner. Kristi recently took over the postal contract station, and it opens tomorrow for business, and she's here to chat about her new business. Welcome, Kristi.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for inviting me, and thanks for that lovely introduction.
Glad to do it. Well. So, Kristi, let's talk at the very beginning. So the postal contract station is downtown across from Hearthside next to the Pocket Park.
Yes, ma'am.
And it was run for a while. It had all those great cards and paper products. And
totally.
I guess the former business has left, and mm-hmm. you have taken it over. So let's start with... okay, it opens tomorrow. What can people expect when you open your door and the little bell rings?
Yeah, absolutely. People can expect a wide open space, because what we're doing right now is just starting off with the postal services. So, you know, we've got boxes in there and we're ready to ship packages, sell stamps, and be a friendly neighborhood resource. We're already taking questions from people about where's this and that and whatever. And that's what we've got going on probably for at least the first half of this month, while we're waiting for inventory and our shelves and stuff to come in.
Okay.
So that we can really start to build out the gift shop side of it.
So there will be a gift shop?
Absolutely.
Okay, and what do you have in mind for that gift shop? Is it a mix for tourists and locals, or is there a theme that you have in mind?
Definitely. You know, we're really looking for work by independent artists, and kind of like the idea of the post office, trying to take a fresh spin on the post office. I'm looking for a lot of things that are modern classics, right? So how are people using classic processes or classic materials, leathers, weaving, etc., and putting a fresh spin on that.
You know?
Wow. So we've got Ricky Tagaban doing some of his screen printed and woven iPhone cases. We've got, you know, I'm going to put some of Rico's skateboards up there. We've got artists down south who, you know, are hand making just these like wacky stuffed animals. Of course, a lot of letterpress, stationery with that modern kind of hip spin to it. But we want to try to get this like eclectic, modern, classic feel in there, and almost entirely by independent artists.
Wow, so it almost sounds like it has a gallery feel to it.
Yeah, I think there will be an aspect to it, definitely.
Cool. And then when we were talking before, while Garrison Keeler was on the air, there's a loft space in that area? There's a loft space in that
yeah,
business?
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of crazy. I had no idea until Kristi Hartman, the previous owner, kind of took me around and showed me the space when I was thinking about taking the contract on. And immediately when I saw it, it just like a light bulb went off that I'd love to just clean up this loft space that's right above it, you know, put a couch in there, a couple end tables, and really make it this like meeting space that'd be open for community groups to use just for free. I mean, it doesn't cost me anything to have it there. And I know, you know, as a community organizer who's, you know, tried to work on different grassroots movements, that's where it starts. You know, it's like those three or four people who are just like dedicated to a cause, and before they really amass a bigger organized effort, they got to meet somewhere. And it's just like, I want to be that kind of space that they're like, 5 p.m. after work, let's just meet over at the post and then they can use it, you know, and to have that common area in just like friendly environment.
That sounds great. Sure. So let's roll it back and start with the idea of that you saying, maybe I'm going to take over this contract. What was the motivating factor?
Right.
I mean, because you have a full-time job and you're an artist. And
yeah. I really didn't need to add another thing.
And a mom.
I know, totally. And actually, to this day, even when I talk about owning a post office or when I would tell my friends, like, oh, man, I really can't commit to XYZ because I'm trying to buy a post office, they just kind of look at me with this blank stare like, I'm listening. tell me more.
There
you
must
know.
Be a reason.
Yeah.
So but, what is the reason?
You know, I just really saw it as such an opportunity to really bring together a lot of the different things that I love. I love people. I love community and interacting with the public and the post office. When you think about it, it's a place where someone's going to connect with someone else. You know, they're sending a letter and someone's going to receive that. They're sending a package to people that they care about, you know, to really have something that fostered that feel and to be able to do it in the same space where I could create and kind of curate this gift shop full of work that I'm really enjoying seeing, you know, locally and across the country, but haven't really seen a unique outlet for it that's really specializing that in Juneau. And then also to be able to offer some different community programming, so organize events, organize workshops, to be that grassroots space. It was just like, this is it. I got to do it. I got to just leap and make it happen. And we're gonna make it happen, you know, in phases, slowly but surely. But I really feel that it's going to be, it has the potential for a lot of wonderful things. And seeing Christy Hartman do such a great job with it when she had it was really inspiring for me, you know, because she was, you know, a young single woman of color when she took it on. And it made me feel like, you know, Christy can do this. I can do this. You know, the idea of the picture of a business owner in my brain growing up and even to this day, right, had been kind of a stereotypical image that I didn't really see myself in. But I looked at Christy doing such a great job being the person that she is, and I thought, I can do this too.
Cool. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. So I have a couple of questions about the workshop element of it. So
yeah.
You talked about a loft space where people could chat and make things happen.
Yeah.
But when you talk about workshops, how many people do you think you could put in? I'm just thinking of potential listeners who are saying, sounds cool,
yeah,
but will it fit my needs? You know?
Totally. Totally. And I think it's, you know, it is a small space. And my poor interior designer, when I'm like talking about all the things I want to do with it, and she's like, okay, so you need this really modular, like complex space that has to be able to change. But it's true. I did want a space that we're going to put tables in to be able to move out or clear to create a space where people can sit down and work together. But I do definitely see them as more intimate workshops. So not like at a university setting where there's a lot of people or, you know, I used to work at the Canvas and you can fit quite a few people in there. But I was thinking of the kind of workshop that happens maybe one day instead of the thing where you show up and you sign up for the 6-week long class. It's the kind of thing where you grab your sister and it's something you do together for an afternoon, you know, learning how to do flower arrangements, you know, or a letter writing workshops or poetry workshops or, you know, leather making toolkits, you know, handwriting, you know, all sorts of things that there is so much talent in this town, creative talent, you know, not just from artists. You know, I mentioned flower arranging. I want to talk to Miss Scarlett, you know, who's got this business and this amazing toolkit of skills and knowledge that I'm sure she, you know, I've seen that she does workshops. Maybe she would like to do one down there as a creative business, you know. So anyway, I'm just really excited about all the different opportunities for workshops that we could have there on a small scale.
And when you say small scale, are we talking 15 or less, 10 or less?
Yeah, I'm thinking probably 15 or less.
Yeah, that's a good number, though.
I think if we clear things out, we'd be able to put chairs in for maybe about 30 people if we did like a lecture series or something like that. But, you know, all things to come. And,
well,
and it'll all, of course, depend on interest.
For Juneau, that's a healthy number for a workshop or a lecture. I mean, because
yeah,
we have the university. We have other venues to do the things that attract more people. We have the university.
Exactly.
We have Centennial. You're trying to fit a niche that has not been filled yet.
Right,
so
yeah,
that sounds really great. So how do we stay informed? So once again, the Post is across the street from Herside by the Pocket Park in downtown,
right,
at the end of that strip on Franklin.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then it opens tomorrow, but to stay, do you have a Facebook page? I mean, like, how do we find out what's going on?
Definitely.
Over there?
Facebook's the best way, probably. The name of the business is Kindred Posts.
Right.
Kindred, like kindred spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Posts, like a post office. And we're on Facebook. We're also on Instagram as Kindred_post. And that's where we're just going to be posting different updates for now. We'll start an email newsletter as well soon.
That sounds great. Well, congratulations.
And absolutely stop by.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Is a great way, even if you're not mailing something.
Okay.
Just to say hello. We love to see people from the neighborhood, for sure.
That sounds cool. And what are your hours for this initial launch starting tomorrow?
Absolutely. Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30. Saturdays, 9 to 2.
Great. All right. Well, congratulations.
Thank
Best
you
of luck.
So much.
And come on back in a month and tell us what else is going on.
Wonderful. Thank
okay,
you so
great.
Much for having me.
All right. Thanks.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. When she wrote me a letter, said she couldn't live without me no more. Listen, mister, can't you see I got to get back to my baby once more? Anyway, yeah, give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. When she wrote me a letter, said she couldn't live without me. Listen, mister, can't you see I got to get back to my baby once more? Anyway, yeah, give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter. My baby just wrote me a letter.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. It's 3:37 p.m. Jeff Brown is at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Our next guest is Ken Fix. He's the director of programming at the Planetarium. You might recognize his voice because he does the show, too. In fact, he'll be
yes,
the host.
Yes, you will
on...
be hearing me tomorrow and Wednesday.
Excellent. So, but you're not here to talk about that. You're here to talk. You have your Planetarium
yeah,
hat
I'm
on.
The
your
other
little,
hat
your
today,
little
yes.
space hat.
Yeah, the one with the propeller and the beanie. Yeah,
there you go. It. I was thinking more of planets orbiting.
Oh, or like my favorite Martian with the antennas coming up.
There you go. I'll go with that one. So, what is going on at the Planetarium? There's always something going on, but there's a film series or something like that.
Yes. We're in the retro sci-fi summer, which basically is we get to run some classic sci-fi movies. This is the fifth year we've been doing this. And tomorrow night's movie was picked out by one of the other volunteers, and they will be there running it. And that's Apollo 18. It's a horror movie, so it's not really suitable for all audiences, especially little kids. They'll probably get spooked. So I would advise caution in bringing young children, and it's a different showing time than what we usually run. This one's going to start at 8:30.
Because it's a horror movie.
Because it's a horror movie.
Wow,
yeah.
I never heard of it. Who's in it?
Oh, yeah, all of our shows are always on Tuesdays.
Okay,
every once in a while, we'll have a guest speaker that comes in, and we do shows on the weekend. But
mm-hmm.
for the most part, our regular Planetarium shows are Tuesday nights.
Right. No, I meant the Apollo 18, the film. I never heard of it. Is anybody that we would know in it, or is it just kind
Nobody
of a
you know
space
that would
horror
be in it.
Film?
No, it's a space horror film. It's
it
shot documentary style, like, hey, we found this footage, and this is the Apollo mission that nobody wants to talk about.
Oh, cool.
So it's okay for one trip through it, but once you've seen it and know where the gotchas are and things that jump out of the corners at you, then it's not quite as exciting as, you know, when you see it the first time and you get spooked. But.
Yeah. All right. Sounds great. It's a horror film. How many times
Correct.
Can you see it? Well, I guess some people are really into their horror films, but it's a space horror film. It sounds great. And then there's another film, too, coming up. Is that
yes,
true?
Yes, that's the one that I'm running. That'll be on the 15th, and that's Galaxy Quest.
That is a great
Which,
film.
That's a fabulous movie, and that one's suitable for all but the littlest of children. I think most of the you know, late adolescents and adults are going to get all the humor in it because it's actually a fabulous movie.
It's
with Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver and Alan Rickman. Yes.
And that's July 15th. What time?
Movie.
I need to know.
July 15th, that one's going to be at 6:30.
And when you show films at the Planetarium, I've been to shows at the Planetarium, but not a film. Where do you show it? Like,
it gets projected onto the Stardome.
Oh, that is
great. About 10 degrees up from the horizon, so you're not sitting on your backs and looking at the top of the dome. That's not the way we run them.
Mm-hmm.
We pump the audio through the sound system in the Planetarium, and that is the only time that the sound system ever gets used is when we're running movies.
No Lazarium over there.
Rest of the time we're running lectures,
right?
And you know, there's no music or anything usually to accompany that, so we're just kind of talking about the stars, and we return to those fall lecture series in September.
Okay. And then the lecture series and the film series, is there a fee for the public?
No, those are absolutely free, but we do try and sell our concessions there, and that helps to support the Planetarium's continued operation and our quest for a digital star ball to replace the aging Spitz projector.
Whoa. And what kind of concessions do you guys sell?
Popcorn, $2 a bag. We also have some boxed candy, and bottled water is $1.
Okay. So I'm thinking that if the films are projected on the dome, 10 degrees up from the horizon, so you're not mm-hmm. looking at it straight up, it's a pretty big picture.
Yeah, it's fairly big, and mm-hmm. it's also a very relaxed atmosphere. Even though we have those padded chairs, the wooden ones with padding on them, you can bring blankets, lawn chairs. You know, we're very good with that in the summertime. We want the atmosphere to be very much like, you know, as much of a movie theater type setting as we can get. Even better because we don't have any ushers bouncing up and down the aisles with flashlights and stuff. So it's pretty good. I guess this is the fifth summer that we've done those. And Apollo 18 tomorrow night, Galaxy Quest on the 15th, and then I believe it's August 26th, it's the last Tuesday in August, we'll be running Deep Impact. That's the third film for the summer.
That sounds great. And if people want to know more or want to go to the web or make a phone call, how do people get in contact with the Planetarium?
The website is www.mariedrakeplanetarium, all one word, .org. And our events are also listed on the Empire Online and on the Jack's calendar of events.
Sounds great. And that answered my other question.
Oh.
You're located at the Marie Drake School.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
So for anybody that's not familiar, usually you're coming from the valley. So you take Egan Highway, you make a left turn at the breakwater, make the very first right turn, you're parallel to the school buildings where all the fences are. As soon as the fences stop, there's a sidewalk that takes you to the Marie Jake Middle School building, and you can see the Planetarium's kind of dome structure on the top of that. And if you went past the Blockbuster video, you went way too far.
That's right, before the school district building and
correct,
before
yes.
Harborview. So, and the Harborview playroom, playground, front playground.
It's right. It's pretty close. You can throw a rock and get to the Harborview playground from there.
It's true. All right. Well, that sounds great. Thank you so much for coming by today. And if you want to listen to more from Ken Fix, tune in tomorrow for Juno Afternoon and Wednesday because he'll be the host.
Yes. Thanks, Joan, for having me on the air today.
Oh, anytime. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. In New Guinea in the 1960s, scientist Jared Diamond documented the bird species living at all elevations on Mount Karamui. More than 50 years later, scientists Ben and Alexa Freeman have documented an important change. The birds are moving upslope to escape warming temperatures that are disrupting their way of life. Here's Ben.
It wasn't just one or two species. It was almost all species were moving upslope quite a lot. The average bird species on Mount Karamui moved upslope by over 100 meters.
One author has called this the escalator to extinction, as species at the top are pushed up and off. Yet, with Papua New Guinea so far away, why should we care? Here's Alexa.
I think it's an example of how we don't live in a vacuum. Our lifestyle choices and our way of using resources in the environment impact the entire globe.
Will we reduce our carbon emissions? The cause of the warming? Call it wishful thinking, but just for a moment, imagine.
Trying to not only protect the resources that humans need, but perhaps contemplate how humans can live alongside of animals and plants in a way that sustains both at once.
To see and hear some beautiful birds that invite us to do so, join us at birdnote.org.
The clinic is closed and you or a loved one don't feel well, or you have a health-related question that can't wait. What do you do? Here's the solution. Starting July 1st, Search will have a free after-hours nurse triage line for our patients in Juneau. Search's free after-hours service is available by calling 1-800-613-0560. For life-threatening emergencies, please call 911.
This message brought to you by Search, your partner in health.
Hello, you're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News. It's 3:46 p.m. We are recording live from the downtown studio above the 360 studio, which leads us to our next guest. Katie Chapman is here. She is the executive director of NCADD. They are hosting a presentation tomorrow night in the 360 studio at 6:30 p.m. with Ben Court, who is also here in the studio. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
So, Ben, this is your first trip to Alaska?
No, just first trip to Juneau.
All right. Well, welcome
to the capital city. Beautiful place.
So let's talk a little bit about, we'll start with the presentation. Let's talk about what people could expect tomorrow. What is the subject matter of your talk tomorrow?
Well, as your listeners know, Colorado legalized recreational marijuana about a year and a half ago. So I'm going to talk to you guys about the experience there and hopefully shed a little light on what you can expect if the same thing happens here.
Okay. And then the chat, you'll talk a little bit and then take some question and answers?
Gladly.
Okay.
Yeah. We have 90 minutes, so really plenty of time. You know, this conversation gets boiled down into bumper sticker-sized talking points all the time, so I'd like to get a little bit more into it. You know, it's a complex, very nuanced discussion.
Okay. And in Colorado, did it take a long time for it to pass? I mean, was it in the works for a long time, the process?
Yeah, well, some people might argue it's been in the works for about 30 years. There's a lot of really well-established and really well-funded groups who've been kind of moving us to this point for a long time.
Okay.
And but no, it's the same election cycle, basically.
Okay, great. So, Katie, let's start at the very beginning with the acronym NCADD. What does it stand for?
So NCADD is the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, and we are the Juneau affiliate.
Okay, great. And then what are your services that you provide here in town?
We provide prevention, education, and actually outpatient treatment. We just started this year.
Oh, great.
So we have a treatment program for adults mainly.
All right. And if somebody's listening and saying, ooh, I would really like to get a hold of you, being Katie, since she's the subject matter expert and I could not help you at all on
please
the subject.
Call me. Yeah.
Exactly. What's the number? How can people find out?
Sure. You can call us at 463-3755.
And do you have a presence on the web? Is there a...
We have a website that needs some updating, but NCADDJuno.org.
I figured
there's so many acronyms.
Yeah, you could just probably look for NCADDJuno, and
yeah,
there you go.
There you go.
Okay, so what was the process to bring Ben up to chat about this conversation?
With the legalization of marijuana coming up on the ballot, our board of directors got together to talk about this issue and what kind of role NCADDJuno wanted to have in our community with regard to it. And we thought that this is an opportunity for us to educate the community about what's happened in places like Colorado. And so we reached out to Smart Approaches to Marijuana, which Ben can talk more about, and that's where we were connected with Ben. We wanted to bring a speaker to town, and Ben is affiliated with SAM, and so here we are.
Okay, so the SAM is Smart Approaches to Marijuana. I know nothing about this organization. Ben, why don't you educate me? What what's the purpose and what do they do?
It's a really neat group. It was a former White House drug policy advisor, Kevin Sabet, Dr. Sabet, and Patrick Kennedy, along with David Frum and several other folks kind of from both sides of the aisle, who after passage of legalization in Colorado said, okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We really should let science, let medicine be what drives this conversation. So can we sort of be a repository of that information and then give it out to other folks who are looking at this? And my world is drug and alcohol treatment. I work for the University of Colorado Hospital in their inpatient treatment program. And so they asked me if I'd participate to kind of bring that perspective. And I've been sober since 1996, so from the recovery perspective as well.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So do you go on the tour? Do you kind of do the have you been asked to go to other places? Like, are you kind of on the road talking about the Colorado process?
Yeah, I certainly get asked a lot, but it's not something that I do a whole lot. You know, I got three little guys at home. And they need a lot of attention. My job has me traveling enough. But Alaska's, I absolutely love it here. And so any chance I get to come up. And like I said, I'd never seen Juneau. So I was more than happy to do this. Also, it's the legislation that you guys are looking at here is based on Colorado's legislation with some changes. So I can tell you what it's more than likely going to be like because there's so many similarities in the language.
Okay. All right. And then if somebody's listening and they say, it's kind of interesting, I might want to go, who would you say your target audience, the perfect audience member would be?
Oh, I'm more than happy to speak to anyone. If you've got your mind made up on this, fantastic. If you're still kind of on the fence and thinking, yeah, that might be cool, but I've also heard the arguments against, come on out because I would love to have that conversation. I think, again, this gets boiled down into really quick talking points all the time. And in Colorado, what we found was that's what a lot of people were voting on. You know, the real fast, legalize it, and not the, okay, if we are ushering in a gigantic new industry here, if you're going to bring a new industry into your state, let's give some real thought to what that's going to look like. And, I mean, certainly, I've come from the position that says that this was a big mistake. I don't think that, well, I'm in the majority in Colorado who didn't realize what it was that we were voting for before we did. So,
how could that be?
Because it was so oversimplified. You know, your proposed legislation here is 8 pages. Ours was 3,666 words. You know, there was a ton in there. And what we did was said, well, this is so that you can X, Y, and Z, again, really quick talking points. And there's so much more to it. The devil's always in the details on these things.
Okay. And it was legalized last year?
Yeah, it was the 2012 cycle.
Okay. So what have you seen since then?
It's been really wild. You know, there's been just an explosion of advertising, which has been a big deal. A substance that a lot of people have always seen as totally benign and harmless, when you turn it into concentrates that are 80 to 90% THC and then put those concentrates into cookies, gum, suckers, candy bars, sodas that are fruit-flavored, it stops being harmless. For example, last week I was up in Aspen, and about 7 miles up the road from me in Basalt, a 7-year-old girl ate some candies that her mom had left out and ended up in the emergency room. So that's the sort of thing that I work in a hospital, so that's the sort of thing that we've seen a lot more of than anticipated.
Wow. Okay,
yeah.
That was very educational. Okay, let's get back to the facts of how we could find out more about this, because this is, you know, a state that's already walked these paths, so it sounds really like a wonderful program. So once again, Katie, what's happening and where and when?
So tomorrow evening at 6:30 p.m. until 8, we're going to be here at 360 downstairs with Ben. He's going to give a presentation to the public. It's free. We're going to have some light snacks and beverages available, and we welcome everyone.
Okay, great. And so the KTO studios are downtown off Egan, across from the Jack, adjacent to the Jack, one would think. And then, Katie, if people can't make this, is it going to air live, or can you be a resource for people who want to? Is that what NCADD wants to be, a resource on
the
subject?
Yeah, absolutely. We're a resource for education and information. So, again, our number is 463-3755.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming by, and
thanks.
I hope you get some sun while you're here. All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Prairie Home Companion celebrates its 40th anniversary this 4th of July weekend from the campus of McAllister College in St. Paul, where it all began. We'll be joined by more than 50 musical guests, including Old Crow Medicine Show and the Waylon Jennies, many more, and the news from Lake Wobegon. This is Garrison Keillor. Hope you'll join us.
Saturday at 4 on KTOO and Sunday morning at 11 on KRNN.
Well, that's the show for today. It's Monday, June 30th. It's 3:56 p.m. Tonight, as far as the weather is concerned, we're going to have numerous showers, becoming scattered late, lows around 49. Tomorrow, decreasing clouds, highs around 67. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. Wednesday, cloudy. Wednesday night, cloudy, scattered showers. Thursday, mostly cloudy, even in the evening. And Independence Day, cloudy, showers likely, highs around 63. Hey, one last thing. Are you interested in music? Would you like to share your enthusiasm with KRNN listeners? KRNN is KTOO's sister station. They're looking for volunteer announcers to host a variety of radio programs. If you don't have experience, trust me. Don't worry about it. They'll train you. And so if you're interested, give Jeff Brown a buzz, 463-6425, or email him at jeff@ktoo.org. If you want to listen to Juno Afternoon, you can do it anytime. Just go to ktoo.org and check it out there along with all the other programs. Have a great day. We'll chat next Monday.